We're in session, board time for June 5th.
Ta-da.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started with our board time. Hello there. Hey there.
Good. One more chair.
I'll go back here.
Perfect. Thanks, Axel. All right, we got two chairs down here. Gentlemen, if you grab a chair.
I'll go back.
That's what our disclaimer is about. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started if everybody. Thank you. Sorry. We're going to go ahead and get started. We're changing the agenda around just a little bit so that we can take advantage of staff being here right now and get them back to work. So Commissioner Madore had a community development block grant section 108 loan guarantee issued that you want to bring forward. So Commissioner, do you want Pete to just lead us on this? Or
yes, go ahead, Pete.
Go for it.
Okay. Under the CDBG rules, entitlements are allowed to borrow money to do eligible projects, and based on that, they are theoretically guaranteeing future CDBG funds to repay that loan. HUD sells bonds on the bond market. We have been approached by Affordable Community Environments to do a 108 loan for approximately $1.4 million. As part of that process, we have to go through our standard citizen participation. We would have to have it analyzed by the county and eventually have the county commissioners authorize submission of the application to HUD and allow the county administrator to sign all the documents. As part of that, we would also engage National Development Council, who has done approximately 95% of these loans in the state of Washington and Oregon, to help us structure that and work with HUD to develop a loan repayment process that would put the county at very little risk. So HUD also requires, in addition to potentially repaying the CDBG loan, using CDBG funds to repay this, to having other funds in place to guarantee that the loan can be repaid if something goes wrong. One of the things that is an inducement to this is ACE has become a subsidiary of REACH, which is either the first or second biggest nonprofit housing developer in Portland after the Portland Housing Authority. So our normal process has been to first take this to the Urban County Policy Board. If they agree to it, then we would engage National Development Council and work with the county finance staff to develop a loan structure that would make the county happy as well as make HUD happy in terms of the repayment. Eventually, the application would go to the Seattle office and then to Washington, D.C., where these are all approved by the Secretary of HUD.
So, a couple questions. First of all, have you done any sort of analysis of how much in the future it would encumber the CDBG funds that we get each year?
Well, part of that is in the details we haven't worked out yet with National Development Council, but roughly the repayments would be about $82,000 a year. Again, depending on the interest rates and how that's structured, we get $1.397 million in CDBG funds, at least we did last year, and the amount we're getting is going up based on the new American Community Survey data.
Okay, even though it was 5% less because of the sequestration.
Actually,
issue.
It wasn't 5% less because of the way the formula worked for CDBG. We actually got more.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, 6% more.
And my second question is you know, and I'm aware of the 108 loan program because we looked at it for something else a while ago. What is the precedent associated with doing a 108, Section 108 loan? Have we done one before?
We've never actually completed one. We started one once with Consolidated Freightways, and that didn't continue. And then the one with the Vancouver Housing Authority, where they actually found better financing.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What was the amount again?
For this one? Mm-hmm. $1.4 million.
Thank you.
And it's actually leveraging $4 million from the Washington State Housing Trust Fund. So if they can't use our money or get other funding, you're going to lose all the funding and you won't be able to.
$4 plus million from Housing Trust Fund?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So effectively, you're talking about $5.4 million for construction, for improvement of low-income housing and construction work in the Washougal area that you'll lose all of if this doesn't get put together, for whatever reason.
And we're proposing to use the CDBG funds for only acquisitions so it will not kick in Davis-Bacon wage rates.
Hmm. The city of Washougal wants this?
Yes. They have met with the city of Washougal about this, and the Washougal Police Department is very excited about this because they get a lot of calls here. And based on Gateway Gardens that ACE has in Washougal, they've had better management of that property, and the police and emergency calls have dropped way off.
So what's the ask today, to start the process?
If we could start this process, take it to the Urban County Policy Board, get their blessing, and then start the process with the county staff to look at how we could structure this loan and work with National Development Council.
So it would still go to the board that you're chair of, for Urban County Policy Board, and then there would still be opportunity for citizen comment, other groups to comment, all of that?
Yes.
What are you thinking?
Well, what I was thinking is that, one, the county is having to guarantee that debt.
At the end of the day, the county will be responsible mm-hmm. in some form or another if it can't. But we're trying to build the safeguards into that so that doesn't happen.
And ACE is worth quite a bit of, well, why don't you provide them with a factual background about ACE in terms of what projects we've approved that they are currently administering?
We've helped fund every project ACE has done. They've done Covington Commons, and in that area they've got the Muse and one other project, I can't think of the name of it, and then McAllister Village over here in Fruit Valley. We've put mm-hmm. funds in that as well.
So my question is really not necessarily how to do it. The question is this the best way to do it? Because if the county is on the hook, kind of as a co-signer for the loan, that's where I have reservation. It would be the first recourse would be to see if Vancouver Housing Authority or some other source can be the guarantor for the loan, the co-signer for the loan. Because
we're the CDBG recipient. We're the urban county that receives CDBG funds under this section. Of
We're the only ones that can do the 108, yes. City of Vancouver is.
It's really CDBG that's guaranteeing this, right, Pete? I mean, the county has to sign at the end of the day, but this is going to be guaranteed with CDBG funds.
The example that HUD uses for other ways to help guarantee this is the example they use is parking meter funds. Money you get from parking meters or some other source. And REACH has a lot of projects, so we could look at rent they get from some of their other products. I mean, projects. But some of this, you know, we need to work out and structure so that the county would be happy as well as HUD.
Good, but so to answer Commissioner Dorr's concern, though, we'd be in second place, not in first place. CDBG funds would be the first place.
Correct.
We would then, the guarantee, we would be in second place, not first.
And we try to put something in front of CDBG.
Right.
And the reason that this looks attractive is because there's such a match that comes back that's three or four times what the...
It's 4-1.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the people that are living there now, 95% of them are at 30% or below median area income. If this isn't purchased by ACE, it could go onto the private market. You could increase the rents, and these people conceivably could not afford to live there anymore.
Now, all of the details you would have to work out to bring to Urban County Policy Board, and ultimately then through the public process of getting comments from the other, you know, kind of from the public and from the other agencies that may be wondering about this.
Well, what we would do is have the Urban Policy Board say proceed with this, and then we could take it back to them, but normally we would then go through our public process.
That's
where we'd have,
what I'm asking.
Yeah,
okay.
We'd have to have publications, have a... essentially a hearing in front of the commissioners, and then again the final approval to submit the application and sign all the documents.
Yeah, the reason I wanted you to come in today is because the ending point is it's going to have to come back to the commissioners to say whether or not, you know, green light. By that time, all this work will have been taken place, and if we're really leaving the option open of saying no, later, that we really ought to ask the question before all that work is done to say, is this really something we want to be able to do?
Right.
And well,
but that's the process, though. That's what that process does, though, Commissioner. It begins to build either assurance or doubt.
Unless it's a preliminary.
Right.
It's
basically taking a lot of work, and because all we need is one broken link in the chain to say, well, don't even start the process because, first of all, we can't guarantee that kind of loan.
Right,
you know, that's really the question.
Right, then that's the question. I agree. I mean, bringing it before, it's a good idea, because then ultimately, if there is a poison pill, if there is just a thing that is absolutely just a non-starter, then it should start. I mean, from my perspective, my concerns are the same as yours, is our position in county having to back the loan. Mm-hmm. Community development block grant funds, having chaired that board that you're chairing, for the 8 years previous to this, while there's always talk about community development block grant funds being eliminated and cut and all of these things, it has been a consistent funding source. So with community development block grant funds backing this, and it coming from community development block grant or from federal funds, that makes me feel more, it makes me feel better about it, but I would still be concerned about the details of how are we assuring repayment and how are, where is that coming from? I don't see, for me at least, I don't see it as a non-starter, but I would be, the devil for me is in the detail of how do we assure repayment so that we're minimizing any liability or exposure. That would be my concern.
I agree. And if it depends on the CDBG funds coming in every year, and somehow because we get a change in course at the federal level and say, well, guess what? That program just went away. Now who pays?
Well, that's part of the structure we would have to do on this, is to have other funds lined up so that if that happened, the payments could continue to be made. And, you know, I've got a description here of the program, but in the back of this, it does say that HUD requires additional security to be sure that if the CDBG program would go away, that there would be some funds to do that.
So clearly, they would anticipate we'd want to tap,
those. Yeah, we'd want to tap into ACE and REACH for that.
Okay.
And could, for example, to serve Commissioner Mendoza's concerns, could ACE be the guarantor if they have so much money, as Chris said? Since it's their project?
Could, yeah.
It depends on how leveraged they already are.
True.
They're pretty leveraged with all their... I mean, all their other housing is very low-income housing, so they have tax credits in it, housing trust fund, home funds, county home funds. So.
Well, again, that's one of the things that could answer your concern or your questions. If we let them go forward with the process and say, hey, maybe one of the first steps is who can be one of the other guarantors, mm-hmm. and to what level can they be mm-hmm. comforting to you?
Yes.
And that's one of the questions HUD would also ask is, you know, what other guarantees are there?
Yeah. Well, if we follow the process and we go back to the board on this, all the other members of the board are not county. And the natural inclination is, hey, you guys got it covered. You stand behind it, so they're not necessarily going to be in our camp.
We can get Washougal to come be our partner in guaranteeing. It's going to benefit their citizens. That would be another question you could bring to the Urban Policy Board as chair and simply say, well, Washougal, are you willing to help us?
And we could, but knowing that's probably one of the smallest money pots available.
How much do we get a year CDBG fee?
1.4.
1.4, and then how much would this be a year?
80,000, 85,000. I mean, depending on the interest rate and other things, but roughly.
For how many years?
20.
How many?
20.
Okay, so I would maybe, what I suggest is to talk with Washougal first and see if they will buy into this, that they somehow, we wouldn't be left holding the bag. It's their project. They believe in it. Are they willing to stand behind it?
I mean, same thing with ACE and REACH. I think the first would be ACE and REACH because it's their project, but then second it would be, because it's in Washougal, it would be Washougal, you know, and so I think having them do that, you know, outreach, I think, is a good idea.
Is that a viable option?
I think it'd be part of the due diligence they'd have to do. You know, it's just a matter of whether we set them on that course.
Okay.
It makes sense to me to do that in that order.
So that allows us then to proceed in a way to do that kind of homework, maybe have a different outcome than had we had that conversation today.
Right. Here. And again, down the line, if this goes forward and then there has to be a payment with CDBG funds, that's less available for Washougal, Camas, and whoever else that particular year.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
You know, depending if we have to do that. So.
Okay. So that's something that you can pursue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
So if they're willing to go that way, then I would think we would go forward. If not, you want to say no?
Well, I think if not, they should come back to us. You know, if
they're go through whatever process you can and prefer that process, and then come back.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I think
you're asking Washougal what?
I think you're going to ACE and REACH and then to Washougal and looking. You know, are you willing to help be financial backers to this, you know, project as a, you know, whether second or third position, whatever position it is, to be able to help guarantee the repayment.
But isn't the point of the 108 money that the county backs it, and that how we get the bond rating, or am I lost? I thought that was the whole point, was the county was going to put our financial status behind us as the CDBG.
Well, we get
we're the entitlement. So
yeah.
We're the entitlement.
Right.
It has to be us to get the 108 funding, is that right?
Yes.
It can't be WashU or ACE. We got to either say we're doing
But you can partner it up. I mean, it doesn't have to be us by ourselves.
Because we still put our money in.
Right, we still have to do a repayment schedule, and so you still have different levels of here's where the repayment's going to come from, and the question is who's going to repay.
It's an additional agreement.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want to use our credit, you stand behind it. You're the co-signer.
So we would still have the Urban County Policy Board meeting Monday, and at the same time try to do this with WashUgal. And ACE and REACH certainly is part of the process of developing the application to deal with that. So.
All right. Which Monday?
Next Monday.
What time?
Like, wait, what?
8:30.
As I'm looking at your calendar and like, oh, that's what I'm doing today.
You'll have the motion ready for you to approve.
What's a UCPB?
Urban County Policy Board.
Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's already on there. You're good. Okay.
All right. So do you have the direction that you need? Are you comfortable with the direction we're given? All right.
And WashUgal, I'm sure, will be at the meeting as well.
Perfect.
Yeah. So. Okay. Perfect. And you're going to make sure they're queued up before they get to that meeting.
Yeah, I'll get a hold of them right now.
Thank you, Pete.
Okay, thank you.
Larry, Chris, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for spending time with us this afternoon.
Okay.
All right, we'll go back to the top of the list. DES Department Head Majors for Success. Bill's been working on he has the sheet that kind of amends things, includes some of the thoughts for qualifications, but we'll deal with that when Tom gets back. It's nothing that's pressing or anything like that. CRC ballot measure and an election timeframes. These are all just carryovers, except for, I think, the last one.
Yeah, we're still
waiting for you on that one. When you want
to
pull
the
trigger.
Yeah, and we had said P holiday, let's focus on that, and then we'll come back to it after we do that. County Administrator Recruitment, we all had a chance to meet with Francine.
And she and I met, and we'll be back June 12th with both what is called a recruitment portfolio with the traits that you guys have talked about, cool. You gentlemen have talked about, plus a matrix of what you all said about how to go forth. And
excellent.
So there will be some reconciliation necessary.
Perfect. Review of membership expenses.
I'll sit down with Commissioner Mielke on Monday because I can outline that and see if that satisfies him.
Perfect. And on Bronson, request for legal opinions. Bronson.
I wanted to talk to you about the process for requesting legal opinions. My perception is that we've gotten more requests lately. And at times there have been requests that Chris Horn and I have maybe both been working on it, didn't know each other were doing it. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be helpful if we just tightened up somewhat how we're making requests for legal opinions. So my first thought was to develop a rule of practice. You know, you have your rules of practice. I went there. There is a rule of practice already on legal opinions, mm-hmm. which says that requests for formal legal opinions from the prosecuting attorney shall be presented in writing and approved by the county administrator, the board chair, or a majority of the board of commissioners. When I look at my role, prosecuting attorney's office role, first thing I go to is the statute. What are our duties? And there's a statute which I think our rule of practice probably was modeled after, which talks about one of the first enumerated duty of the prosecuting attorney is to be a legal advisor to the legislative authority and to provide written opinions when requested by the legislative authority or chair. So what I would like to see is getting to is something where we are, if there's a request, it's given in writing. It comes from either the chair or the board. We talk about whether or not continue to have the county administrator or somebody who would ask for an opinion on behalf of the board. Can you want to continue in the rule of practice or not? But I've got a couple pending, I think, but I would actually would like some clarity on them by having them put in writing.
Okay.
That's good.
So you have two pending. What are the two you have pending?
The website question.
Correct. Okay.
And then Commissioner Medora at last board time was asking about CRC and their ability to lobby, and that's about as clear as I am on it.
Well, let's address each one of those and make sure at this point whether or not it makes sense to go forward with them individually, just so we put them to bed. The intent behind all of not putting things on a website is to prevent significant public resources from being expended for political gain, right? That's the intent.
It is. So you use the word significant public resources. The intent of the law, as I understand it, is to have a clear delineation between the use of public resources, whatever those public resources they may be, from political purposes. So, and keeping a separation between the two. That is the law, as I understand it, is not about using money or significant resources. It is creating a clear delineation between what the public is paying for, which is our time, our resources, everything that's in this building, and political. And so when you're running a campaign, I mean, and they've said it over and over again, they tell you, and they hammer you with this, saying, don't use the phone, don't use emails, you know, don't send an email that's political from your, that doesn't cost any money to send an email from your public address, but it is a use of public resources for political purposes. And so the law, as I understand it, and they try to make it as bright as possible for us as elected officials so that we don't get into a muddy gray area that may lead to citizens concerned that we are using their resources for political purposes. They try to create that clear, bright line as much as you can within the law, which is very rarely bright, that the public's resources are being used for the public purposes and not for political purposes. That's the way I understand it.
And in order to... We all want to be able to uphold the spirit of the law there. But we actually, in the process of trying to be... uphold that to some degree, we can expend large sums of money that would actually violate the intent behind it. In the case, what we're talking about here is that we have a link to a website, and a website has a link. Maybe, I don't know if you'd be able to find a link, but that organization has sent an email, so there's no link there, but we could end up, and it hasn't cost us any money at this point, and you could end up tying up our legal department, spending, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of dollars trying to answer that question so we don't use public resources to advance some political cause. You see, it does the exact opposite. So at this point, I would say if we get a complaint or if there is something that we in our that we see that there is a violation, that we see it ourselves, then we can address it. Right now, you're not aware of a violation. I'm not aware of a violation. And if there is, that we ought to either fix it ourselves, or somehow, if we have a difference on it, that we add our DA office advises how to resolve it.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying as far as that. So first of all, there was a complaint. I received an email saying, I received this email. What's going on with this? That raised red flags to me saying, oh, geez, this is a site that we're linking to. And again, trying to make sure that there is a clear separation for the public and that they have a clear understanding that we're not using public resources for political purposes, it raised a red flag to me, which is why we asked for, just like you said, if somebody complains about it or if if we say, gosh, this is a red flag, we ask for the opinion. That is exactly what I did, which is the purpose of, like the Attorney General's office at the state level, and you've talked about it before, where we're a functionary agent of the state, and then, and you talk about, well, the governor does this, and so we should. The Attorney General's office is very similar. It has its own statutes, but it's similar in that it has a separately elected official, much like Tony Golic, but it serves the legislative branch and the executive branch, and when a single legislator, says, I have a red flag, I have a question, legally, they go to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General offers an opinion of it. It doesn't, that's all it takes for a single legislator to do. I think that it's good to put sideboards on that so it's not unduly costing public resources to get answers to spurious questions. But when I have a citizen telling me, I see this as a problem, and then I look at it and say, gosh, this is a red flag. Then I would expect that if you got that same email from a constituent saying, hey, there's, you know, I got this email and it's from a group you're linking to, I'm really concerned that you're muddying the waters, or you're breaking the rules, or you're crossing the line, whatever, that you would ask, that you should have the freedom to ask that question and say, well, is it a problem or not? And if it's not a problem, then we're able to go to that constituent and say, we've asked, and this isn't a problem. You know, this is, it's three layers deep. It's not even on the website. It's an email that goes out from a list. So it's not an issue. Then we're able to answer that question. The question I think that Bronson's talking about, and I think it's a good one, is how do we set the parameters, the sideboards for how we ask those questions? I think that makes good sense, because, you know, it's one thing for me to, and it's true, and like I just handed it off to Bill and I said, hey, Bill, can we find out what's going on with this? That's not a great way to ask for a legal opinion on something. It doesn't have to be, you know, I don't want them to spend 100 hours researching this. It's something, but by the same token, you got to at least put it in writing or write it down and say, hey, this is how it was raised. This is the question I have. Could you give me an answer on this? So figuring out the sideboards for that, I think, is a good thing. As far as getting the answers, I also think that's a good thing, because that's our responsibility, is to make sure that when one of our citizens does have a concern, and that we then see it and we can say, well, yeah, that I see that as a concern also, that we can get that get that answer back from someone who would know, because I don't know the answer.
Well, certainly the rule of practice you've already solved. You already have it in place. So basically you want people to have it, right?
Yeah, right. I think we...
If we were doing the rule of practice, I as chair need to write it down and then send and to get an answer to it. I am not someone who tends to ask a bunch of questions of our legal staff, but this is one that I said, okay, red flag, let me at least get this answered. It's kind of like the constituent that we asked Bronson to get some, that you had asked him to respond to someone who had sent to Lieutenant Governor Owen. And you'd said, hey, take a look at this, see if it's something that we need to respond to, and then do with it what you want. It's a similar concept. It's just saying, look, I got a constituent that's concerned about this, and it raised an issue for you, and you said, well, let's get an answer to this.
What I would suggest, so that we end up, especially knowing that your time here is limited and the workload from the PA's office is going to fall on fewer hands, at least until we find somebody that can possibly help to share that load, that we be careful about what we pass to the PA's office. I would think that we ought to, rather than just pass it to them, that we would talk about it in board time first. And in this case, the question is, I would think the appropriate answer back to the constituent that sent that email would be, is there a web page? Where is it? Send me that link. And so you basically make sure that the bar is high enough to recognize that in your eyes, it looks like a violation rather than an organization sent an email and so another somebody else sent an email to you. So it's like instead right. of having them go chase something, you haven't even seen firsthand with your own eyes,
right.
Respond and say, show me the link.
I agree with you as far as doing that legwork first. I did do that legwork. I didn't see anything on the website itself, but on the front page of the website, there is a... For more information, sign up for our list. So that's what keyed me in to say, okay, this is where I'm not sure. Because if it's on a web page, it seems pretty clear to me. But, all right, I'm on the front page of a website that the county has said is credible enough that we're going to link to it to give you information. Cool. I'm good there. I'm looking. I've got information on that front page. I'm a citizen. I say, I think this is great. This is information. I want more information. I sign up for that. Believing I'm going to get more information, then I get an email with candidate endorsements. That's the question I had, and I did not elucidate it very well. I did not write it down in a way that was as clear as it should be. But that's where, when I did the legwork, I came to a spot. I said, this is a potential problem, but I don't know if it's a problem or not. And so instead of saying, well, it's a potential problem, but I'm just not going to even do anything about it, I'm just going to say, well, whatever.
Freedom of speech.
Right. Well, freedom of speech isn't limited by someone taking a link off of them. I mean, you know, you could... But regardless, I could say whatever, it's freedom of speech. They send an email. Who cares?
Do you feel strongly enough about this that you want to task a prosecuting attorney to spend his time researching this?
To get an answer to that limited question, yes, because it is enough of an issue, and you know this. The Columbia River Crossing as a project is a heated issue with factions on both sides that are entrenched and passionate. And they are looking for things to declare as inappropriate, as illegal, as improper uses of the public's funds on either side. So to be able to ask a simple question that can get clarity to be able to put that to bed, yeah, it's definitely worth it from my standpoint, for all of us to be able to say, we have done this in an effort to get more information on a broader spectrum of this issue, and what we have done is appropriate.
So you're going to write something up as a question to be answered by our PA's office?
That I'll try to make it as tight and as simple as possible. Yes, I will do that.
If we follow the rules of practice, then because you are chairman, you have that prerogative to do so.
Okay, and I will copy. Is it appropriate for me to copy the question to the board?
Yeah,
as long as they don't respond back and it becomes a conversation.
Yeah, right,
okay,
right.
So I will copy. I'll copy the board on my question. Like I said, I will try to make it as limited and as tight to what I'm trying to convey today as possible. And then Bronson can tell me that still is too broad, and he'll slap me and tell me make it simpler or make it shorter. I mean, this is not something I think should or needs to take much time. But it is something that deserves, from my standpoint, for the person who raised it and for the people who I know will be looking at it, deserves an answer that I can clearly convey to them.
So about the second request.
Two benefits to that, putting it in writing thing, mm-hmm. is one, I think it helps you think through the question that you've really got.
Yeah, that's true.
And two, I've in the past, if it's a phone call or some other way of being communicated to mm-hmm. me, have come back with a different version of the question than what you thought you asked.
That's true, and we've had that discussion recently. Remember the long discussion when I was on the phone, and you and Tom are trying to decide what you got and what had been asked of Bronson, and we're going back and forth with that. And if it had just been like, here's the specific question in writing, then we probably wouldn't have had that. So, yeah, that can help us.
It takes a little bit more time to do initially, but I think it might save time.
Well, your meter is worth a lot more than ours.
Fair enough, man. Fair
so
enough.
What's the second question?
What was the second?
Second
request.
Issue.
The second request was at board time on Wednesday.
It was related.
You were asking about, if that's an issue, why isn't it an issue that CRC is using resources to conduct lobbying?
Okay. And I'm going to lead by example, and you can scratch that off the list, okay?
All right.
And Mary,
so,
do you have something?
No, but
While we're talking about that, do you want to change the rule?
No, sir.
Well, the rule is you got three ways to get an opinion. Now.
Yeah, but I got
to
write it down.
Well,
right?
You do. You're the county board chair. You can do it, but I also can do it, and then a majority of the board can do it too.
I think what we're talking about mostly is let's not be abusing the. You know, let's make sure that we're thinking it through before we're actually asking questions.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, absolutely. These are your rules. As long as you're happy, I'm happy.
You asking a bunch of questions, Bill?
I'm going to write it down. Mr. Chairman.
We'll take you off of it if you
That's
want.
A good point,
Won't matter if you want.
Smart aleck.
Kelly was just asking, this is for formal opinions, and I was just dropping by and asking for opinions.
Well, we don't have AG
anymore, Kelly.
Well, so we're not going to be able to get in the door now.
No, but it makes the AG's office has formal opinions and informal opinions. You don't really have that difference between.
Well, I don't see a difference.
No.
Because the drop by verbal opinion is going to become,
right.
You told me.
I agree.
I think that's
seems clear to me.
I'm thinking of the use of Chris's time when it comes to putting together the, let's say, the fee waiver ordinance, that kind of working relationship. I assume that's not what we're talking about.
Okay, good.
Opinions in a different pot.
Yeah.
That's a great clarification.
Yeah.
Now, because we do that with Chris Cook, Chris Horn, Lair. I mean, so, yeah, good.
Yeah.
Oh, and we do have a rule on that, too. Commissioners' use of staff time work assignment should be first discussed with the board and approved by two votes. Just so you know.
Fair. Although we have always, and I will say this, and Commissioner Madore has used this, and we all have, is that we've always given each other the freedom to get information. Is that as independent elected officials, there's always been, at least as long as I've been here, the understanding that any individual commissioner can make a call to staff and ask for information and should be able to get that information from staff and without the staff saying, well, go get two votes before I'll talk to you. If a commissioner is saying, go do something, you know, tasking them with actually implementing a policy or administrative request, that's where it raises to the level of, okay, you gotta get two votes for something where you're actually telling me to implement something. But getting information, I mean, a citizen, basically you think about it, we're just enhanced citizens, and citizens can call Axel or Marty or whatever and ask them a question and get an answer. So it's always been that as far as getting information.
Correct.
Does that make sense, Commissioner?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yep. Did you need anything else from us, Bronson?
I don't think so.
All right. Now, we gave you a little bit of flack. I gave you a little bit of flack. And then Hosley Otto gave you a little bit of flack last night. Don Orange, I think his name is. But, yeah, we're going to miss you around here, man. How long do we have you?
Till the end of the month.
Till the end of the month? Yep. Okay. Well, we appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
We've blazed through the old business. Mm-hmm. Commissioner reports fee waiver amendment discussion among commissioners. Tom's not with us, so we're going to be flying a little blind with his stuff. But do you want to talk through a few of the, kind of the key tenets that you're working on, or what do you want to do?
Is Chris Cook available? Because he was
Marty was going to come up too.
Is that Chris Horn? I'm sorry, Chris Horn. Yes.
Yeah, Chris and Marty were going to come up. So let's roll back around to them and go through staff reports until they get here.
Okay.
Glenn, do you have any?
Just that we have embarked already on, with your permission, to work
on
the
budget.
We're building baseline. We're going
to start in your early. Thanks.
Good. Glad to hear it. And Axel, did you just get a hold of Marty to tell him to come on?
Yeah, they're both.
Axel, what other things do you have, sir?
Well, okay, so I have Commissioner Stewart's feedback on the most recent BPA letter, which is really just a strengthening of many of our comments. And actually, it's a strength. What I did is I went through the other jurisdictions, our partner jurisdictions' comments, pulled out the ones that I think are common and strong, mm-hmm. which mainly deal with the alternatives, the Oregon alternatives not being looked at, and then mm-hmm. undergrounding some wire. So I'm going to wait, get feedback from Commissioner Madore, Commissioner Mielke, and then hopefully get authorization from you three once. Or you can give me the authorization today once you're okay with it to send it out to the other jurisdictions.
You have done fabulous on writing those in the past, and I trust, even though I haven't had the time to go through.
Well, I'll wait until you look at it, but just by the end of the week.
No, I'm saying I don't want to hold it up.
Okay. I just want to start talking with Camus and Castle Rock,
let's
I'm with
move.
Pallets and Washington.
Yeah. And I have had a chance to read. He did a great job. He did a really good job on it.
And, Lair helped me out a lot.
Didn't he sound like he discredited somebody else?
There's another funny example of that. I sent my staff report to Holly to look at today.
Yeah.
She sent it back and she said, this is really good. Well, it's because she proofread the She had done it for
she didn't remember
it, but it was already her thing. I'm like, yeah.
Well, at least she's consistent.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I've had staff bring me stuff. I've edited it back and that's, this is terrible.
Yeah, your words.
Commissioner Mielke's not here to kind of champion this one.
Can we
but
try to call him again just to make sure that he's not going to pick up this time?
So he set that meeting up. We had the gentleman that came in and was really upset about the Highway 99 kind of vagrancy / panhandler issue.
Yeah.
We met with him. He wants to, and Commissioner Mielke, I think, is supportive of this, but wanted to approach you both with starting the initial process to look into what other jurisdictions are doing with panhandling and aggressive panhandling.
Uh-huh.
I think Vancouver passed something because I remember it.
They
I
did.
Remember the newspaper article about it interfering with the firefighters fill the boot thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was why it dawned mm-hmm. on me that they had passed something. But are you okay with us researching that and maybe starting a process to look into sort of aggressive panhandling and a possible ordinance?
Come on,
your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message. 3-6-0-8.
That's right. There you go. That's teamwork.
I would assume that you would talk with law enforcement too, because they're the ones that they would be out enforcing it. It's not a code enforcement thing; it's a sheriff enforcement thing, right?
Right. And you know, there, so there's two things that I found. There was a couple really good example model codes on municipal research. One of them, the first one they do is they deal with the aggressive panhandling. So we're not saying you can't ask for money, but it's when and how you do it and where. So don't do it at bus stop. Don't do it where people are trapped. I'm getting in my car in a parking lot, or, you know, you have to do it in a non-aggressive way and also in a safe way. So don't do it right on the freeway overpass or whatever. The other one is the camping ordinance. That one's probably a little more controversial, but, you know, keeping people from staying overnight, littering and leaving all kinds of stuff on public property, parks, streets, things like that. So there's kind of two ways that different places have dealt with it. I'm not sure even to this point, honestly, what Vancouver's done, but when cities do this, it has a tendency to push the problems out into the unincorporated county, so that's something that we could also look into.
Yeah.
But Commissioner Mielke was going to bring that up. Can we research it?
We do need to address it, and what process we go through to address it, we need to talk with our sheriff's office, make sure we get their input, talk with other municipalities, maybe the WASAC, be able to give us some models of how other counties have addressed this issue.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that. Yeah, the first stop is with the sheriff's office and probably save and get their input into what they think.
See if they think we need something more as a tool.
Hold on.
I would say that we do need something, and we want to be able to have them participate in that to offer their input rather than give them just simply a veto.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Although, I mean, and I will tell you up front, I tend to, based on what I've seen and the research that I've seen done, and even when Vancouver was talking about it, it's like squeezing a balloon, you know, that it doesn't get rid of the problem, it moves the problem.
Right.
And
but
so
that is all we can do. If they move from Clark County to some other locality, then Clark County is a better place, and that's all the control that we have. We can only do what's good for our jurisdiction.
Right, but maybe they move to Camas, or someone that it doesn't have.
Well, then they'll follow suit, and they'll solve their problem there too.
Yeah, that's why I think the one model code tried to hit the sweet spot where they were very upfront saying, we're not telling you can't do this at all. We're telling you how you can do it, and you can't be aggressive, and you can't do it in these isolated areas.
It's worth researching. I mean, it's obviously an issue, and I've been up at I went at 99th Street and I-5 quite a few times over the past month and a half or so, and there have been significantly more times that I've been there where all four spots have been taken up. And just a brief update on that, and that I was going to raise with you guys anyway, is one of the things that I saw when I was up there as a young couple, early 20s probably, the young woman's pregnant, and they're panhandling. And so I saw that, and it was disturbing, and I was thinking, gosh, I know I need to call someone, you know, in community services or someone, see if we can connect them with services. Because there are lots of pregnant, prenatal care kinds of things that we do through community services and public health services that are done by nonprofits. There's things we could connect them with. So that's what I was thinking. Then I saw Facebook messages going out the next day saying that there was an older woman standing at the same interchange with a sign that said, please stop giving my pregnant daughter and her boyfriend, husband, money for heroin. And which, at that point, I was more than just a little disturbed. And so I called immediately. I called over to Marnie in public health. I didn't get a hold of her directly. I got a hold of, I forget who I talked to. Started talking to a couple of people. I said, this is what's going on. Is there anything that we can do with this? They came up with a brief strategy that had Shane Gardner, who's excellent from the sheriff's office, going out there to do, and he was going to go out, try to do an evaluation. There's a term for it that they had. I think it was the evaluation, but it may have been something else. And then work from that to connect them with services that might be available for either drug affected or pregnant young mother. And so they had like three different services through nonprofits they might be able to help connect them to. I have not heard back as to what happened with it, but when the gentleman came in and was talking about it, you know, he was talking about the garbage and potential dangerous people. This was a different take on the same problem, but it was to me just about, it was equally disturbing, you know, to see that was
The argument against doing something that basically says you're going to make some kind of an ordinance against panhandling is that you don't care, you're not compassionate, how could you be so cold-hearted? And so this really needs to be paired up with solutions.
Agreed.
This needs to be that if we need to be able to somehow find out what are the resources, what can be done to help people so that they don't have, so that even the public doesn't know they don't have to resort to these tactics, that there are meals located here, there are places where they can, where shelter can be provided, there's clothing provided. Somehow we got on our website or on a website or on a list or some flyers or something that can be the source of information where you can get help, what help's available, and maybe even some of these organizations will want to participate in this. Yeah. That, yeah, we have these bags of that little, you know, healthy snacks that people want to come get them and somehow feel like they're doing something to help these individuals,
right,
then they can. So we want to make sure that if we end up with some kind of law or some kind of code that says you can't do it this way, that we pair that up with we have to address the compassion side.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Okay.
Can you handle?
Yeah, I'll follow you back up with Commissioner Mielke and we'll work on it. The
great
historic promotion grant program press release will go out, so those applications will be out at the end of the week, and then that hoof rot meeting with Fish and Wildlife is Saturday. So
are you gonna go to that? Or
yeah, I'm gonna go with Mark Smith and Bruce and those guys.
Good.
I see we have Chris Horn here, and he's got plenty to do.
Yeah. I figured are you done?
Yep.
All right, now let's roll back.
Hey, Marty.
It's done. Marty, Chris, and Axel. Well, he's not done.
Valuable.
Now we're rolling back to Fee Holiday.
He's not as valuable.
You're not
now. Yeah, exactly. So Fee Holiday. Axel, you wanted them here. Did you want to kind of, purpose of what we're going to do today is kind of just talk through some of the potential amendments, and then you specifically wanted to talk through a little bit of the process of how we might manage that.
My discussion with Bill and Marty, I am foreseeing different ways to work the meeting next Tuesday, depending on how many and how complex your amendments are. We have the fee waiver. It's out there. It's been out there soaking for a couple of weeks. People are aware of what it says. A couple of things. How many amendments you have and what they're going to change and how complex they are. And then we have a deed meeting that Marty and I are presenting at to talk about some of the fee waiver issues and concerns tomorrow. So you can utilize that to your advantage tomorrow afternoon at 2, probably. There you go. 2, aren't they?
Can you email us with the exact time, please?
I'm going to see if it's already on my schedule.
Well, I'll be there. And then, of course, next Tuesday's meeting. So depending on how many amendments there are, we just need to really kind of talk through how that's going to look at next week's meeting. So we don't get it in, so it doesn't turn into a rat's nest and we have to, we have to try to fix it on the fly.
Well, and what Bill reminded me of, Commissioners, that, and we used to do this a lot, and frankly, I just hadn't remembered, is that when we would make significant amendments, whether they be complex or just the number of them was significant, what we would do is we would go through the process of, okay, do we agree to this amendment? Yeah, we do. We need, we agree to this one, we agree to this one. But then we'd see something and be like, wow, it's messy. We need to clean it up. We would bring back, we'd say, okay, staff, we've approved it with the amendments, but bring it back to us for final approval on consent next week. And then that gave us, that gave staff time to clean it up, clean up the language of it, get us a copy, a striped, underlined copy of it in the consent packet that we get on whenever, late that week, and then be able to, do the final blessing of it that next Tuesday with a clean copy. It gives us the ability to not worry about, oh my gosh, did we get it exactly right and we made final approval for
the final product as
right
well.
We close public comment, we close public testimony, we do our final deliberations, we take action, but final action is reserved for consent agenda the next week. And that's a way to do it if we end up getting next week into a bunch of amendments that we pass that make it more complex. That is an option for us. And it's something that we've done before, legally, that we've done before.
Are you suggesting that we don't vote on this thing on the 11th?
No. The suggestion would be that we vote on it. So we vote on amendments. We raise amendments. We vote on, okay, so I move that we approve. This isn't an actual motion, but we move that we approve the resolution. Okay, then we start amending it, and I approve, and between the three of us, we approve 1, 3, 6, and 7. We approve those four amendments, and then we take the final vote. know, we approve this resolution as amended, subject to final approval, approval on consent on the 18th. So what you do is you vote on it. They draft the final version of it. As long as they got the wording right in the consent agenda next week, it's just a stamp like we do on a lot of things in consent. It's something we've already visited. It's just something that we're giving the final go-ahead and because they needed time to dot the I's.
And that sounds like a good practice if we're normal. In this case, I don't think it sounds like the steps we ought to take. And it also says what we ought to do and what we ought not to do on the 11th, because the original plan was for this to be voted on the 7th. Then we push it to the 28th. Now we're at June 11, and it could be, and then if it really doesn't get implemented until a week later, what we're doing is we are keeping Clark County on hold. All the business developers that are out there, why in the world would they come in during this season with this weather out there that's buildable weather, and knowing that they're going to pay full price now, but if you just hold off one more week and then one more week, we end up keeping Clark County on hold.
I understand your thoughts on that, and I smile because I do appreciate the the push. What I would say is we may not have to do that, but it is an option if we end up at a place where Commissioner Mielke has some amendments he wants to put together, but they're complex, or I have amendments that we agree to, but they're complex. And then all of a sudden we look at this and we say, gosh, this is really complex. I'm not comfortable moving forward with this because I haven't seen how it all works together. And then your option, if you don't have that as an option, then the option is up or down. First of all, so this is only there as a potential if we get to, it's another option if we get to that place. We may not. We may very well not. But if we also say on the other side of it, well, let's just not offer amendments, or let's offer only one or two amendments, and so keep it simple so we can get it done, well, then maybe it's something we don't agree with. You know, maybe it's something that we don't sign off on. I don't know. That's something we'll have to, do through the public hearing. So, and as far as people waiting and all of that, staff has told us many, many times that the building season is already underway. The low-hanging fruit for this season is tenant improvements. Because remember when we talked about, we had up on that board, the ones like starting from ground up, they're not hitting this season at all with this. So a week doesn't do them any harm. The tenant improvement side of it, I agree with you. I mean, that's still in the works. And as things that are closer to tenant improvements. So I understand the concern. I think that, my goal would be to work toward something that we can just sign off on the 11th. This was simply something that Bill reminded me of that is an option if we get to a point where we have amendments that we like, but staff is saying, oh my gosh, I need to, we need to write this. And instead of Chris Horn writing as fast as his hand will carry him and then hoping that he gets it right, it coming back for final approval on the 18th. It's just out there as a potential. I understand your concerns.
I have one suggestion. And
yes,
it actually came to me this morning. I talked to Mark Hess, who was doing some inspection up near Salmon Creek, the driving range. And he said, yeah, a new employer came across the river, blah, blah, blah. So why did they apply for a fee waiver? Because they're bringing 20 jobs from the Oregon side of the river. So in any event, if the board says, yeah, we have these amendments and we approve them in concept, but it needs to be cleaned up and bring them back on the 18th, if anybody applies between the 11th and the 18th, they could request a refund based on
date the 11th.
On that.
Yeah. So you can make the effective date basically the 11th?
Yeah.
There's another way
you
of
could
potentially
request a refund it. During that interim week
and having it take effect, and so that the businesses can come in and not have to wait that week.
It's not simply the building season that says you're going to get out there and you're going to build something right now. It's that week by week by week, we have people that are out of work, and we put that whole process on hold, and that time counts. When you're out of work, weeks count. And they're saying, what in the world are they waiting for down there at the county? Thought they were going to do something. I'm very sensitive to the timing. Really, the best solution we can do is to try to keep things simple, because you can always amend it. You can always fine-tune it after you get the basic infrastructure in place. Right? So, really, what the way this... I wish that Tom was here today, or that we could get him on the phone, because the idea is we don't all discover independent amendments
right.
on the night of the hearing, and then things, it's a recipe for making things messy.
Yep. Yeah, I was hoping you'd talk a little bit. I mean, there's only three sections, section 3, 5, and 8, right? Three is applicability. Who are you going to let have this? What and
right.
why?
And let's get into that. And yeah. so, because we'll have a lot of the discussions of why we're doing this and all of that next week. And it's 3:15 right now. Yeah. So why don't we just let's have a little bit of the conversation of that, if that's okay with you, Commissioner.
Well, if we can't really refine what we can refine to the point where we have a pretty structured resolution ahead of it. If we can't do it during this meeting, then we ought to do a workshop or something between now and then, so that we can nail down what can be nailed down. I'm a little surprised that we got this far and we haven't done that. We're still all kind of in a
panic. You scheduled it for today,
right? And plus, we've done lots of work on it. In the resolution, there is a resolution. I mean, in the resolution, you actually drafted a lot of in conjunction with staff, so there is a resolution. The question is, will you have support for that resolution? That's the public process. That's actually going out into that public hearing room and listening to people and taking their comments into it. And we've done that. We've already taken lots of comments, and I have lots of them in there. We'll take more comments next week, and then we'll deliberate. That is the nature of governance. That is how we do things. So we haven't missed any steps here. In it, the uncertainty as to whether it will be able to pass on the 11th, I understand that, but that's the nature when you bring something up. I mean, every time I've ever brought something up, I didn't know until I went into that room whether it was going to pass.
Is Tom on? Oh, Tom's on.
So getting, trying to
Hello.
Get to a...
Hi there.
Hey, Tom.
Oh, good.
We got done with all of our meetings.
Nice. We're just talking to, just getting into the conversation about fee holiday hearing for next week and kind of expectations and hopes going into that hearing. And do you want to kind of reiterate what your concerns or thoughts were on that?
Tom, so that we don't all discover independent amendments that evening and things get kind of messy, it would be good for us to be able to do whatever we can to keep things simple and work things out in this board time now as much as practical, so that when we get there, we're pretty much all on the same page. We know what we're facing.
And I will say,
fee just waiver resolution.
As far as being on the same page, and I will say this, and I said it last week, it is in my belief is it is not appropriate for us to try to come to consensus on amendments to a resolution before public hearing. Before the public has, A, had a chance to weigh in, and B, we do it in public view with the people who want to testify listening to the conversation so they understand why we are agreeing to something or not. The purpose of what we were going to do today was give each other heads up on potential amendments that may come forward, so we're not blindsided, so we might at least be able to be thinking about, all right, well, how might this fit, how might it not?
Yeah, I like that, and that's kind of where I am, too. I still have only the two amendments that I talked about before.
What do you got, Tom?
Well, the one was reasserting that we have a right to stop the program. You know, if we get too many takers and it becomes too expensive, that we have a right to quit it and or pull the plug on the program. And I forgot what the other one was.
I think it had to do with the TIF and backfilling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we wouldn't backfill the TIF from the road fund.
Okay. Well, and Commissioner Medora has talked about that. And again, I'm sure that, you know, Chris and Horn, and he will bring that forward at the hearing as far as another potential way to do that financially that wouldn't implicate the backfill of road fund.
That's what I'm going to present, and then I'll do my discussion appropriately there, I guess.
Yeah, okay. So if we so I think we're both on the same page there. We're all three on the same page there. We want to be able to ensure that we communicate that we're going to be financially tuned in, and we have the don't count on this. This is no guarantee it's going to last.
Hold on. Sorry, I'm very sorry for interrupting, but you're talking about, well, I think we're all three on the same page. That's deliberation and action. That's us then agreeing to something before public hearing. So I would request, please, to, Tom's told us this is what he's looking at, and you may agree with that, but now is not the time for us to be agreeing to things that the public is not included in the conversation of.
Chris,
I know it's we're legal in this room, but
here's what, Chris, if you could address this, we're not trying to get to the point where we're determining at this point before we do the public hearing whether or not we're going to vote yes or no on this. Instead, what we're trying to do is to end up with a consistent resolution that conveys what we all can foresee, so that when we provide the resolution to the public and we have our public hearing, we're all on the same page at that point, because we all got the same resolution. That's what I'm trying to do.
We already have the same resolution.
And right? Do we have the freedom to nail that resolution down at this point, or does that make sense?
Well, let me just say one thing, and I'll try to answer your question. What you told me to do was keep a protected resolution that had one document that would go to the hearing. If the board decides that that you want to, for discussion purposes, agree to add some things to that protected document, the document that will become the one we publish, and you're in an open public meeting, so that it's not an agreed document, or you're not voting in advance of it, but this is just the, for the purposes of discussion, this will be the document you work from. Uh-huh. Then, as long as you do that in an open public meeting, you're in compliance with the statute, and we're not violating 3632, which requires that the ordinance be amended in an open public hearing. Right. So it depends on what you're... They're two different things. We're not amending the ordinance. It's just what document goes to the hearing as the proposed or the
that.
One for discussion purposes.
So we already did that, and we said that there was a protected document.
Right.
If we get two votes saying, yes, let's go ahead and amend that protected document, that is an amendment outside of a public hearing.
Well, we're not amending. It's the agreement you had before. We're not doing anything really different than you did before. All we're talking about is, what is the document that you're going to have for discussion purposes? It is not one
okay.
that you're voting
it's
on.
Not we agreed upon before. It's 3:24 right now, and Tom, I will tell you this. I'm not going to sit. I don't have time to sit through us amending, and I'm not going to, because I think it's inappropriate. I'm not going to sit through us amending the document that we already said would be the one that goes to hearing. I like the idea, as I said before, of us knowing what amendments may be brought so that we can actually be better prepared. But I do not think it's appropriate, and I don't have time to sit through 45 minutes or an hour of amending a document that we've already protected and said that to the public, this is what's coming to hearing. So, Tom, I don't know where you're at.
I think that's what we've agreed to. It just be aware of the amendments that each of us will be bringing forward, so that we can do homework to say it's good or bad or accept it or not.
Perfect.
And we can have those two ready. Those are
well,
easy. So what?
So we got those two. That's two people that just said that. All right. So amendments that I have that I'll be bringing forward on this, it's really tailoring. First of all, when we first talked about it, it would be a 50% for retail on the new construction because of the potential impact fees that would come from that and the big number that we're talking about. So that's something I will be bringing back up. Also be bringing up, we heard a comment about trying to make it for those who do not already have a presence, so that we don't get people just abandoning one storefront to build another one. That's something that I will be looking to amend, and so that those who already have a presence, you know, that it has to be a net addition and not just a move of those jobs. So I want to make sure that that's taken care of. The third one is one that I just started working on with Marty this morning, and I'm hoping it's simple, but it's a research issue, and Marty's working on it with me. And the simple of it is, people have made the assertion that, well, we have data on our existing program, fee holiday program, that says one third of those who actually built and got this fee holiday said it made a difference. So my question to Marty was, is there a common thread in that one third? Were they small businesses? Were they local businesses? Were they? What was it about those businesses that made it make a difference? Because what we've heard is that the larger, well, you know, the larger chains don't care about it, blah, blah. They care more about the time. But I didn't really have a sense of how I might capture that until I started thinking about the data that we already have. Because we've talked a lot about, well, you know, you can tell a lot from the experience that you already have. So that's what I'm looking into is there a way, and I don't know the answer to this, it's if there is a simple way of characterizing it or capturing that and really locking in on who are those businesses that this would matter to, and so that we can make sure that those businesses are taken care of, but that we're minimizing the potential outlay of funds or shifting of funds. So those are the three that I'm working on. That's it.
So you're going to want to work that into the resolution as sort of like a reporting requirement or a talent.
No, it's using
research.
It's looking at what we have already done. It's looking at the data we have in hands and saying, is there a common thread from those businesses that I can apply to this ordinance?
So do the research for an amendment. Gotcha.
Correct.
And it's raw data, really raw data.
Exactly. And those are the three that I'm looking at and looking into between now and, you know, and a couple of them are easy, and that last one I have work to do. And that's all I have.
Okay, my turn?
Yes, sir.
Okay. On the intent of us coming up with to freeze the document was to solve a problem, and that is that we all each had our own version of the document. And the solution to that would be if we do refine the document, that we do it in a public meeting where we do it so that this is an organized way, so that when the public finally gets a copy of it and the hearing, what's published for the hearing is as close to the final product that we're considering as possible. That was the intent. And so it's good that it's been frozen up to this point, and it's good that we've all continued to do our homework since then, and it's good that we all understand the what would be the fine tunes. And at this point, I think it is just fine tunes. At this point, Chris, is this a public meeting that we can actually just simply put the little fine tunes in the document?
We're an open public meeting.
This is, so he already said that, and then Commissioner Mielke and I and myself already indicated that our priority is to keep the document as is until the hearing.
Let me finish, please. Okay. Chris, is it appropriate for us to be able to make the fine details on this document during this public meeting so that we can, to solve the problem of having to make unnecessary changes then?
I use my example. In the legislature, sometimes during the meeting and the different testimony we have, we may add amendments by recommendations of those testifying. Yep. It's really, really hard to come up with a purified form. Even if we were to take the time to do it now, it still wouldn't be perfect, and we would still be looking for amendments or maybe hearing recommendations of amendments that we might want to try to accept. So it'd be really difficult to do that. I think that we can get there, but one of the things that we would do to maybe limit some of the testimony or have constructive criticism from the people testifying would explain to them that it's work in progress and we're there to listen to recommendations, and then we move forward and submit those recommendations as amendments.
I fully agree. This is not in any way to short-circuit the process or try to eliminate or restrict any amendments that evening. That's the purpose for the public meeting to start with, so that we can hear and consider and possibly amend in order to respond. That's what we want to do. But going into the meeting, there's only a few minor corrections that would polish it up and remove any unnecessary foreseeable variables between now and then. One of those is the for us to be able to for Chris to be able to add whatever language he would suggest so that it would make it more explicit that we can have the right to pull the plug at that is not a guarantee. Somehow we communicate that. I assume that makes sense for us all, right?
You're proposing an amendment to the document, and once we open that can of worms, then we're gonna have the conversation of, and there some of them aren't just fine tuning, but I think Commissioner Milkey made the point very.
Anything other than the fine tunes that are already mentioned here.
So.
I don't think that we'd get there. I think we have a fine piece of work.
Yes.
And then when we get before the people, we find out, well, gosh, that was a good idea at the time. We know some of the other testimony really added information to it. We may add or subtract, or we might end up removing some of the things that we think we want. So I would really recommend that we make those amendments. It doesn't sound like we have very many. I think that I have three. I think I heard three plus from Steve, and I think that you have two or three. Those are relatively really a small number, and I think that we could really go through it quickly and openly in public, and it might come across and appear better rather than try to fix it at board time and then go back out with something different than what we proposed. And I think it's still going to come out the same, and I don't think it's going to change or halt any testimony.
And we can have the amendments prepared in the back ahead of time.
Well,
yeah, that's an idea.
Tom, before you got on the phone, what Commissioner Stewart was suggesting is that we don't pass the consider voting and passing this resolution that evening.
Hold on. That's actually not what I suggested. Let me say what I actually suggested, and then Commissioner Madore can hear it again.
Can I finish?
No, because you're saying what I said. I will tell you what I said. What I said was that in the past, when we have complex amendments and we pass the amendments and we say, I'm passing it, we're passing the amendments, and then we pass the underlying bill, the underlying legislation, the underlying ordinance or resolution, but that staff needs to actually redraft some things because we actually changed a bunch of words and they need to feel confident they did it right. That what we do is that we pass it and then we say we pass it contingent upon final resolution and consent agenda next week. Now what, so that we would take action. And then we would come back and look at and make sure that they dotted the I's and crossed the T's correctly the next week. What staff then followed up and said we could even make the effective date on the 11th instead of the 18th. Also, my point was it would only be necessary if we get to a point where staff is looking at us sideways and cross-eyed saying we need a week to make sure we got the writing correct on this. But that hopefully we don't have to even do that. That's what I actually said.
I think that as we move forward and we put as many amendments in writing as possible, and as we make those amendments, the staff reads it back to us, that we would know what we're voting on, and I would like to continue and vote for it at that time.
Agreed.
In other words, for instance, for the resolution right now, it says that the road fund will transfer the road fund dollars to that particular TIF district on a permit by permit basis. When we all foresee that that's not the best way to implement that.
Right. And what I would do at that time, Commissioner Madore, is I would put forth the amendment to not do that. We would have discussion, and then we would vote on that amendment as we would do each one individually.
And someone may testify and actually help us and say, well, you know, instead of doing that, you might, instead of doing X, you do Y, and that actually informs our amendment and makes the amendment better. And so instead of just saying, well, I have the answer now, by having someone have a chance to look at it and say, well, I don't think that's right, why don't you try this, you know, something else instead, it helps us in our discussion as we do that amendment. It may change a little bit how we actually do that amendment.
Well, I think we'll have testimony before we do the amendment.
Exactly.
Because the people are going to see what's already been, what will be submitted on the back table will be the few that may not be all of them.
Sure.
But the few that will be there will listen to testimony, and as we understand it, and then we'll agree to the amendment or disagree to the amendment. But what we put forward, we don't need to have testimony on the amendment because the amendments are put forth after we've made a motion.
Right.
To move forward. So we don't have testimony on each amendment. We'll probably have those during comment prior to us discussing and coming to final agreement.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I would assume that we would try to keep the document as simple as we can. That was really the goal. I was hoping that we'd get some simplicity so that we remove as many foreseeable variables now as we can, so that the document that's really going to be considered would be the document as best we can foresee it before the meeting starts. Otherwise, they're going to be arguing against things that we know that we're going to likely change those things, but we haven't somehow revealed it. We're still producing a resolution that is like, yeah, but we're going to change it, but we didn't tell them we're going to change it.
Well, we can have these at the back, and I think in the staff presentation, we can try as hard as we can to very clearly articulate those before public.
And I don't want to push the point very much. I just want to make the last little thing here, and that it seems to be so unusual, so extraordinarily, why are we doing this? We've never had a resolution that, I mean, I'm new at this, so I don't know. But I would assume that anytime you're going to have a resolution, that we'd work out the resolution as best we can before we present it. And then you always leave the door open for amendments after that. But you nail down what is foreseeable, and you try to, the staff finishes their homework, to get it done as best we understand. You don't finish that all that work out in public when
yes, you do.
Let the political scientist help you here.
Yeah, okay. Do it.
That's exactly what the deliberative process is all about, Commissioner.
And it's the sausage making.
Government is the ugliest form of sausage making you can imagine, and that's exactly why that's what the deliberative process means. It means you do your work in public so they can see what you were doing. The very thing you said last week is just the opposite of what you're saying now. You were so concerned, and I was really pleased to hear you say that. You know, there's going to be so many amendments flying around here from my fellow commissioners. We got to freeze something in place so we all know what at least what we're going in for. Those were somewhat your words. I'll paraphrase. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but this is what I heard. And that is, we need to freeze something in place so when we all, when Steve and Commissioner Milkey, Commissioner Stewart, and you all have different thoughts on it, that you do that in front of the public in a deliberative process. And that's exactly what you've done. And you've kept it in his mayonnaise jar, haven't you, Chris? Is your mayonnaise jar sealed? And nobody has touched it. Now you hear three possibilities, two possibilities, and whatever you will have to say about
mine are the same as Tom's, and there may be one or two more, Chris, that you and I have talked about.
Well, what are those?
Chris, can you...
So to just to make fit, and that's what the government that's what government's about, is a deliberative process, so that everybody who has an interest comes forth to the hearing, come to the public hearing, you who are interested, right. And we will show you what the product will be, ugly as heck,
yeah,
but we will show you. And at the end, and the only reason I mentioned that Commissioner Stewart, because we had a commissioner who was very, very specific about the fact, yeah, and let's put it, show me what all you changed, underline it, and cross it over so I can see the end. Because it may not make sense to me once I see what my amendment looks like. And that's the only reason you do that. You don't have to affect effective. You don't have to change the effective date. Nobody will lose any money over this because you keep it the same, whatever your effective date is. And nobody coming in the door. We can give staff instructions. Oh, you're coming in now? Okay, you're going to be under the fee holiday. Hold on a minute. That's my civics lesson for today about the deliberative process.
So Chris, do you want Chris to?
Well, just to explain what I think Commissioner Madore said, in lieu of committing money to a particular district as we go forward, the amendment would reflect that the money exempted or waived would be treated as a public share. And so as we do work in particular districts, the money that we have exempted will be paid at that time. So we'll leave money in the road fund as it currently is, and so it can be spent in any given district, whereas if you were to pay it into a district, you can't move it around. So one, I think this deals with both Commissioner Mielke and Commissioner Madore's issue, was by leaving it in the public share, it keeps its flexibility, and yet the commitment to spend it for road purposes remains the same. The other issue that came up as a result of testimony was regarding the monitoring period. The original discussion was regarding monitoring every so many months, 6 months, and the discussion at the last hearing was more regularly than that, maybe as regularly as every 30 days. So that was one issue. The other issue related to this retroactivity, and that is that we could make it applicable to any project that had applied for permits as of a particular date. If you want to pick June 4th, you can pick June 4th, and so those people that have gone forward, if they want to come back, they won't be punished as a result of being early. And then the last one, the current ordinance says that it's not applicable to any governmental operation with the exception of non-residential developments in the university district. The only question presented for the board is that the way that's currently written, that would allow governmental non-residential developments to be exempt from, as long as they were in the U district, to be exempt. And my sense is the board did not want to do that, so that would require some cleanup just to make that clear, that any non-residential would have to be limited to WSUV, but otherwise governmental projects, if we wanted to build a new building out in the U district, we'd have to pay application fees, just like City of Ridgefield or some other governmental entity would be.
WSU is the only government.
An elementary. Yeah.
So those are the amendments. So were there any others that you were cogitating on, Commissioner?
Those are the ones I thought of.
Yeah, we talked about the same problem that we had. We had apartment buildings and senior centers, and mm-hmm. Basically which are forms of residential.
Right.
And the idea of making sure that problem didn't get incorporated into this. Did you need to change the wording a little bit to make sure?
Yeah, that will be a proposed amendment to clarify what non-commercial means, or what is excluded from non-commercial, to ensure that senior homes or some kinds of residential homes might not or would not qualify for this. And so that is a proposal.
And we solved that by putting the non-residential. I mean, that's...
Well, I understand, but I think he just wanted to clarify that point.
Right, to clarify that point. Hotels, is that residential?
No, it's not. No, that's commercial.
So that's something you're going to want to clarify.
Well, the thing is, because I'm thinking that hotels and senior centers, places where people sleep at night, if that's the primary place that it is, that would not be what's including, that does not qualify.
So that's the proposal.
The one
just for simplicity.
Thank you, sir.
By the way, let me say, I didn't know coming up here that we were going to be discussing this, so I didn't bring my ordinance, I didn't bring my listed changes. And so I apologize if I didn't have the whole list.
There is at times some confusion on what assisted living or retirement center or Alzheimer's care facility or memory care. Are those residential or are they commercial? They're actually both, because they have staff 24/7, especially when you're talking about full-time care for seniors.
And remember this for the conversation next week, because I'm sure the public will definitely want to hear about that and the differences between, because that's if we start talking about getting rid of one, I would hate to go into the hearing and say, we've gotten rid of that, and people are like, why the heck did you? You have great explanations, and certainly we want to make sure that that's part of the public conversation.
We have the one that's outstanding still, at hospice care.
Yep.
Well, Just the intention to refine that a little bit. The medical field is a good field. That's a good thing for our community. So basically, what we don't want to do is have unintended consequences. We get the kind of activities like, oh boy, that doesn't help us. That hurts us. Mm-hmm. Because if it ends up, I don't want to exclude care facilities at all. That's a good thing to. That's really, I consider that kind of like the medical field. That's a good thing to keep that.
Okay.
But as for hotels, basically, one of the big indicators of are we on the right track is whether or not in the morning are they going to drive across that bridge to get work over there. If we got a hotel where everybody's going to work over there, is that the kind of business that we want here?
Gotcha. Okay, that's good to think about.
What would you?
I'm not giving you an answer, but it's very good information to think about. It's a great question.
That's a tough call.
So yeah. In order for us to, now we can talk about the unless we have specific amendments that are worded, that Chris, you have prepared for each of these things ahead of time. That address these issues. Unless we do that, then you can't. It's too much in flux.
Again, the nature of the democratic process that is the sausage making or the bill, perfecting the bill is the nice way they put that. In the legislature, they do it on the floor of the legislature. They will perfect the bill on the floor of the legislature after it's been amended in committee, after it's been amended going back the other side. They still
No. We do that 2 years later.
Fair enough, man. Exactly. So there is no perfect bill, and inevitably we will have to have those conversations in public where we may not have had an amendment at the back bar that we're going to have to talk through. But that's the nature of this. That's the nature of the process. And to have them hear us have that conversation is valuable in making something that works.
But we're going to have...
So, you know, like what Leta gave out...
I love that thing. That's cool.
Is to have, you know, Commissioner XYZ amendments by section, and so people can see it. This is what we've got.
And you can introduce them and explain them, but we're going to have them on Tuesday night, I think.
And it won't be all of them, and it won't be perfect, but it'll be a start. Yeah.
And I'm good with making sausage. There's no problem. It's an ugly process. But here's what I want to avoid. I want to avoid saying, well, we're going to drag this out, and because we're talking about concepts, and we got don't have the wordings right, and there are so many things that it's going to be. For the consent agenda next week.
You worry too much. Telling me worries too much, Tom.
Let me finish, because the consent agenda cannot be a foregone conclusion. It's not approved until it's approved. Until we vote on that thing, whoever applies during that week, there's no certainty. So they're waiting until that thing gets approved. And that's why Clark County is on hold.
We're going to have it amended to the best of our ability, and we're going to approve it next Tuesday.
We're going to take a vote next Tuesday, you mean, right?
We're going to take a vote next
Tuesday.
Thanks, Tom.
To vote on something.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah. In order to maximize that success, and our success is really when our community gets back to work as best as it's within our power to do so. It's that we do our homework. This falls back to make life easy for our customers. There are our customers out there.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we can do to do our homework, to have the actual wordings proposed ahead of time that we can deliberate and consider and fine-tune when we get there, that will streamline the process as much as we can.
All right. Agreed.
I think we can get her done.
All right, ma'am. All right, so we all have our homework to do. And
yeah, there's one other little thing he asked me about, and that is that this resolution should include the tracking, some of the tracking metrics. When people apply for the permits, that they should specify in there their best guess is the number of permanent jobs they're going to provide. Greg Kimsey was asking the question.
Yeah.
So I would invite Marty.
We had that actually in the earlier forms. We have how many jobs do you anticipate creating?
Mm-hmm.
We have that in the form now.
Yes, I have seen that, and like to make sure that, that's still in here. Whatever other metrics can be, I don't know, are there any other metrics? Thank you, Pauline.
They have those. They have the metrics that we've been tracking, at least. So we can make sure that we have those. Because I definitely want those, too.
Well, what other metrics? I mean, this...
We'll get them. It's almost four, and we'll get them for it. That's part of the homework we're going to get done.
We're already collecting the approximate dollar value of the development of the building, right?
On the larger projects, we are. Cause
well, why do we get everything?
That granular? We can get that granular.
What?
It's a single tenant improvement, a 1,500 square feet in a very large shopping center. It's hard to get specific data on that.
Well,
in terms of sales tax, property tax, all that other good stuff. So the bigger projects we can get to.
Just the value of the project.
Oh, yeah, we can get that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Excellent.
Okay. So there's two basic parameters.
All right, so we got some homework to do. I'm trying to move this. I'm sorry, sir. So we have the homework to do. We've gone through the potential amendment. Mr. Horn, thank you. I think that's all we needed from you, sir. Is that all we needed from Mr. Horn? At fee holidays or anything else that we need?
Yeah, Chris, between now and then, I'm going to be able to work with you to be able to have some prepared.
Give me a call.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks.
All right. You are conscientious about this, and I appreciate it, man. I'm sorry. I mean, we push only because, you know, we've been through this a little bit more. But that's why we push. We push because we love. All right. Mary, what do you got?
Quick reminder, major closure on I-5 this weekend.
Yes.
The state is the boss of that.
Yep.
In case you have questions or anybody questions.
I put it out on my Facebook page. Hopefully we're putting it out there as well and pointing them in the right direction. Anything else?
What? If there's night hauling, you're on TV.
Yeah, you're on it. Yeah. Kelly, what do you got?
Two things. One, I wanted to share the plan that was put together last night at the conclusion meeting. The board indicated it wanted to have an educational session for the freeholders prior to their candidacy filing date. So this is a sort of a plan for doing that presentation. The one thing you might pay attention to is the date. We're shooting for July 18. It's kind of a call whether you want to do it close in on the filing date or further back. But the other thing is...
Hold on. So let's, because I don't want to go through the detail of the whole page, but as far as when we do this, preference of the board of would you rather it be kind of sooner to now, or would you have it be sooner or closer to filing or closer to now?
So there's about 2.5 weeks in this case, 2.5 weeks prior to the filing date opening.
I think it'd be closer to filing. Get to people who think they're interested. Then when they get there, they'll find out if they're interested, and then they'll go forward to probably the following week to file.
That's a good idea. Okay. I like the Commissioner Medora.
How many? Oh, we're talking about classes, right?
One class
total.
It's like a head start. It's a head start to make sure that people know what they're signing up and responsible to do.
Ahead of that, why don't we put something on our website that would basically be the educational thing if people want to be able to evaluate it?
It's a great idea.
As possible.
Sure.
Perfect.
Kelly and I'll put something together.
Okay. Excellent. Great suggestion.
So when do you think? Is July
18th? Yeah, this is good. I think I agree with Commissioner Melky on that, and I think Commissioner Medora, are you good with that as well? Okay. And then, but as soon as we can, get some information on the website so that people can start looking at that on their own. Great idea.
The other thing, in talking
about... Wait, Commissioner Melky, what?
No, that sounds like a good plan.
Okay, cool.
All right. In speaking with Commissioner Melky during the week, Tom, what we're handing out is a draft of the letter for the invocation program that would go out to the clerics.
Oh, good.
Right. And so basically it was saying let's make sure the board approves it. It's been on your H drive since, I think, April 25th or so. So just to get the blessing to let this go forward, and we'll send out and start getting some takers, so to speak.
Yeah. That's okay. I trust those two guys. They'll beat each other up to make sure I get it right.
Yeah, exactly. I just read through it, and even though I didn't vote in favor of the actual resolution to do the invocation, I'm happy to sign this letter. I think it's a good letter.
Thank you.
So this is the letter. Do we have anything more about what defines what the religious leader is?
No, I think what the intent of the letter is to notify all those clergy of invitation.
What about the guidelines, though? Didn't we figure out the guidelines?
Those were approved by the board.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We could probably include those guidelines with that letter.
Or I'll transcribe that. I'll make sure that they're there.
So just to wrap it back around, so Tom, they were just trying to get a copy of those. Tom's suggestion was put a copy of the guidelines behind the letter.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Good to go.
So add an enclosure.
Yep.
Good idea.
Good.
Okay.
So anything else?
We're green light on this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm done.
Give them to me to sign. Or just use my electronic signature.
Oh, yeah. Because
there's going to be a bunch. Yeah, dude. It's not like the Boy Scouts or anything. I don't have a stamp like Tom does. All right.
Hey.
Yeah, I know. I need one. Getting carpal tunnel. All right. Bill, what do you got?
3.1. We'll be back next week with Francine's vacancy review commission. You remember we had to do with that. She has to do her workforce plan. Then I have these three. Four next week.
Next week. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm sorry.
We're not approving anything. This is for next week. So he's giving us the week in advance. He's giving us the
Mighties.
And for Gunn Benton.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll look at these. We'll come back next week. What else?
Request for work session or two, a docket.
Wait, before you go ahead. Wait.
We're doing those next week, though. Because remember you told them we had to do it a week in advance. We need to get them.
I know what the norm is.
But for Gunn Benton.
I know. You can't get special privileges to a single manager, man.
What is Don asking for here? Is this something? Is this adding a new position or two?
Yep, it certainly is. The first one is a natural.
Is he not deleting any others, just simply adding.
There's a vacancy in the natural resource specialist. He's asking to fill that vacancy because Brent Davis was promoted, and the other one is it was already approved by the board, a program coordinator for a limited duration of 2 years. He's asking to make it permanent.
Okay. Well, if we already approved the one that. I would assume that we can decide at this point if you want to hold off on this because you got some reservations, or if you feel like, well, it's okay if he wants to make it permanent.
I believe in fairness to every other department head when we have set the policy for all of them that we get these a week ahead of when we make a decision, then we make a decision. I think it would set a bad precedent if we do something different for a single manager because there will be cries of favoritism. And so I think that it's reasonable for us. It may be reasonable for us to do it, but I would ask us to please, we set the policy in place. Let's use it consistently.
Okay.
You lost me. What are we?
We got three vacancy review requests, and a couple of them are from Don Benton and Environmental Services. Commissioner Medora suggesting maybe we could just go ahead and move forward with them this week. Our policy has been, and it was something that Commissioner Medora asked for, was that we get the vacancy review requests 1 week ahead of when we're actually taking action, so we have a week to do our homework and make sure that they're correct.
Wasn't a week or two that we authorized the filling of those positions?
You did three about 2 weeks ago, yes.
So these are different.
What's different?
These are different ones. These are new ones.
Oh, you're looking at adding FTEs?
One, yes.
One, yeah. But it's a different request.
Review it for a week.
All right.
On Marty's, he's got a senior plans examiner.
Yeah, I think Alan's retiring. That's probably his position.
I would assume that Marty has our support to make sure he's well staffed. This is for building permits, right?
Yep.
We do that next week too.
Perfect.
Well, I would.
Let's just do it next week, man. Just either we're going to do them on the fly like we used to, or we're going to do them with a week
in ahead. There's two ways you can handle this. One, we can tie our hands and say, however obvious the solution may be, we always wait for a week. The other way is, if any of us has any reservations that we should hold off, like be able to do a little homework on something, then we can wait. And all it takes is just one person saying, I really want to be able to wait to next week. So that way we're consistent in offering ourselves the freedom, but we're not delaying processes because we start working for the system instead of the system working for us.
Okay, so for this week, it's a good clarification. For this week, we had one, Commissioner Milkey, who's not with us and can't see them, who has asked for it to be next week, I would ask for the same. So for this week, let's wait till next week. Next week when we talk about these, though, I think it is a very valid thing for us to look at to say, well, all right, maybe the policy is just that's our general policy, but if we look at them and we don't have any concerns with them, we fly them through.
Well, let's
and so we can do that next week, but next week is when we will develop these.
Oh, okay, but let's do this so that we know the policy works for us, we don't work for the policy. Instead of requiring us always to delay a week, let's make the policy so that if any of us has reservations we would like to wait a week, that we can. But if we all are in agreement in approving something, our policy says we can do so.
And what I'm saying is that's a good suggestion. Let's think about it and let's make a decision on it next week.
Okay.
Because I frankly, you're the one who brought up this policy in the first place, and now you're wanting to change the policy to. I mean, so
it works for us. We don't work for it.
Right, but we're working for you right now. You changed the policy once. Now you want to change it again. So what I'm saying is that based on your current policy, that let's wait a week. Then maybe we all decide that we're going to change the policy, make it work for all of us next week. All right. Cool.
And
what else you got, Bill? Is that it?
There's for community services. I see. Is that two positions? The first page and the back page.
Yes, sir.
And community services, is that Marty also? The community development.
Yes, Marty is also.
Okay, and what's the...
One is an OA2 and one is a planner.
All right, so again, the whole purpose of us taking a week was for us to do our work independently, do our homework independently, and come back that next week with decision making. So I'm not going to take up any more board time on homework. So anything else for you, Bill?
Yes, sir. Two items on work session requests. One's a docket item for urban holding removal. That's scheduled for the 19th of June. And then Pete Capel is very concerned over the cash flow to be able to fund the proposals as we're planning for the 2014-2019 TIP. So we're going to have a pre-briefing on the TIP so you can see what the cash flow problems are.
In a work session?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Bill?
Yes, sir.
It was my understanding you're talking about the park impact fees.
No, sir.
The money that we have there. It's my understanding that it was he came back with this the week after we had that discussion, and it was a more positive outlook that he had, that he was able to accommodate maybe building one or two parks as well as be able to handle the lack of revenue from the parking fees.
No, sir. Yes, that is correct, sir. This is a different topic. This is the transportation improvement program coming up, and this is you haven't looked at it yet. This is a pre-briefing that we've never had before on the TIP program for the next 6 years. Pete is concerned about the cash flow that you need to look at. This is transportation, not parks.
Oh, so it's TIP.
Yes, sir.
But it's an F, not a P.
TIP. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But you are right about that, and we have that all. That's coming up next, just so you, for your information, sir, that's coming up next week.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Excellent. Anything else? So, all right.
Yes.
Commissioner.
When is that scheduled?
Next Wednesday.
Okay. I assume that we will be reprioritizing, going through that list of what projects are on that.
Are you talking about the... Transportation Improvement Program? That's not next week.
That's the July 3rd.
What's next week?
Parks.
Lifeguards.
Sorry. Yeah, that's the lifeguard one. I know.
Just almost.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
You're right, though. They'll have to reprioritize road projects if we don't have enough.
Yeah, so what did you say about TIPS?
That's the TIP.
That is the TIP.
Right. Transportation Improvement Program for 2014 to 2019.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Pre-briefing.
Okay, so I
July
assume...
July 3rd.
Okay, July 3rd. Okay, and that's what we're going to be considering in looking at the priorities of those. I think what I think would not be good would be just to go to that meeting and say, how are we going to fund this? That would be backwards. It assumes that the priorities are all worked out and that they ought to be frozen.
No, they're not. They're recommended. The TIP starts with public input that's been developed, comes to the board for your approval. This is looking at what may be possible for this six-year period, 5 years of which have already been in the prior program, and talking about cash flow. That's all he wants to do.
Right. I'll start meeting up with Bill Wright and you before.
Right. And giving us the freedom to reprioritize if necessary and if it makes sense to us. That is our right as a board.
Well, I would take it one step further, and that is...
I think what we might see there, I think we're going to see the impact of the downturn of economy and the lack of construction and the lack of the TIF money coming in, and it's going to be like an update as to how far we are from behind from building those projects on the time frame that we thought we were going to do it.
Well, this reminds me a little bit of the RTC meetings we've been having, and that is that we get these things you that just kind of says, well, it's an up or down, and you can't change it. And
no, sir. No. This is
a pre-work briefing.
Session. Yeah. This is early. This is not a...
Nothing will be decided.
We're not being asked to make a decision. This is a workshop ahead of a work session, ahead of a hearing.
You don't adopt the TIF until the fall.
Yeah, you're all good. We got plenty of time.
Just to give you early warning about cash flow concerns.
Okay, can you set me up as soon as possible here
with Bill Wright?
They're not ready until the work session. They're still doing the crunching of the numbers. Well, that's why they asked for July 3rd.
Well, what I'm asking for is a list of the projects as it stands in the TIP program.
I have that in email.
Perfect. Okay, that's what I want to be able to look at, because then I can go into the meeting already knowing what makes sense and maybe what doesn't make sense as I see it.
Great idea. And so actually,
I can email you the current 6-year plan. Yeah.
Awesome.
Good. Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
I can give an example of one of the things that we did when we had a little shortcoming a couple of years ago, and that project that we put off for a couple of years was 179th Street. Because of the shortfall of funding. At that time, we went back and emphasized on maintenance of the roads rather than additional construction. That's the reason it appeared as if we had a lot of money in the road fund. We really didn't. We just kind of held back spending it, doing the maintenance until we had enough money to pick a project to go forward with.
Yes. Also, we want to make sure we're approaching the end of the month here, in the interlocal agreement with the Vancouver Parks needs to be on. We need to do the public notice thing and evaluate
I think we have a meeting on the 12th for that.
Right.
We do.
Okay. Suppose we had a meeting on the 12th. What's the public notice and can we get our decision made in time?
Yes. The work session's on the 12th. We have till the 30th, so we give the staff direction on the 12th. We have time to notice the hearing of what we come out of the work session saying, this is the direction we want you to head. We have time to notice it and get it done well before the 30th.
How much notice is necessary for the public? It's a public hearing thing, right?
Hmm.
No. There's no public
notice to City of Vancouver.
Yeah.
So there hasn't. So if we modify or terminate the interlocal agreement, we don't need anything more than it's just put on
regular
the
hearing. Yeah, regular notice requirements. Nothing statutory.
You're sure about that? Just
be, well, I think we don't give public notice on that. We give Vancouver notice, right?
Correct.
Let's find out.
Make sure that our PA office is good with that.
Totally agree. That way we don't find ourselves in a bind because we didn't have the right scheduling. That's a great idea. Let's double check.
And I hope to have at that workshop we're going to have a better understanding what Vancouver really did or wants to change too.
I think we will.
Okay.
Excellent. Anything else from commissioners? Commissioner Medore.
I think we're pretty much out of time.
Okay. Commissioner Milkey, do you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Yeah, I got nothing else either. How's the conference so far?
Man, there's so much to know about healthcare. But you know, Bill, you're on the right track. Self-insured, we're kind of behind the schedule. A lot of people are stepping up to that. The savings is immense. But some of the counties had some of their people here. Also from healthcare and from payroll. So I've got a lot of notes and a lot of stuff we collected. We were having presentations every half an hour from all different types of things. It's great information, and we're going to follow up, and I think that we'll probably have some of our staff visit these things as we move forward.
That's awesome, Tom. Thanks for all your work over there, man.
Yeah, tell everybody hello.
Yep, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks. All right, that's all we got. Thanks, Tom. Take care. Safe travels.
Yes, sir.
All right. And you're going to, so you, Kelly, you're clear. You just use my electronic signature on that letter?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
No problem.